Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Do we have Willie? Don't have Willie quite yet, but
Not yet. We
do have Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you for joining us. We were just discussing college football playoff. My question to you, Michigan 1, Washington 2, Texas 3, Alabama 4, Florida State 5, Georgia 6, Florida State, Georgia looking out, on the outside looking in. Did the playoff committee get it right?
Very good question. Very, very pertinent question. I'm going to be boring and say that if I were on the committee, if you asked me, I would have had Florida State. But I think Alabama's better. But I'm of the games matter, and I'm also of the we don't know what we think we know. Like, I can sit here and tell you that I think Alabama is better than Florida State, but I was probably on the air with you guys last week and said that Oregon was better than Washington, and Georgia was better than Alabama. We all thought that, or most of us thought that, and we were wrong. So I know these are extenuating circumstances. They're unique. We have not seen this with the quarterback position like it is. I understand there's rational arguments on both sides. Unlike most people, I will agree that there's rational arguments on both sides. So again, I would have Florida State understand what the committee did there, but I think it's very, very difficult to say these are the best teams when you have, you can also go by results. But it's not the as egregious as maybe them picking Alabama over Texas when Texas won outright. There's certain things that were worse. So that's kind of my long-winded answer to saying I don't really agree with them, but I sort of agree with them.
And my issue wasn't Alabama getting in, because Alabama has the best win in the country against Georgia. Alabama absolutely looks like one of the four best teams in the country. My problem is the inconsistencies with the college football playoff committee.
I agree. And just didn't get as much notice. But, you know, they took liberty over SMU for the New Year's Six. And I was working. I just saw the quotes on social media. I wasn't listening to Boo Corrigan. But basically he said, well, even though Liberty had the 133 strength of schedule, they just kept winning their games. Well, you know, why is that more important for Liberty than Florida State? And SMU played two Power Five teams and lost. I think, the week-to-week ones are like more of a TV show, and I get why they come out there. But when you're Boo Corrigan, whoever you are, when you come out and you've got the whole college football world ready to just parse through everything you say and find inconsistencies, you have to be sure all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed and everything you say makes sense, because you're going to have people like us around the country criticizing you and questioning what you do. Because if you have rational thinking, if you might not agree with everything they say, but if they're rational about it and they can explain what they did, then, okay, we get it. It's just, like you said, Caroline, the inconsistencies that can be maddening.
Now, Mitch, with this Florida State team, obviously we know they were down to their third-string quarterback in the ACC championship game. But that's not the guy who would have actually played come, you know, college football playing time. Do you think this was – it seemed like Florida State was going to be the oddball left out. If indeed, once Michigan beat Ohio State, they were just waiting on, hey, listen, the SEC championship game, we got to put Texas in because they beat Alabama if Alabama do win. But it seemed like they were already sort of, you know, putting this thing together to leave out an undefeated team.
So I'll preface this by saying I am not a conspiracy theorist at all. I don't believe in, oh, the SEC had to make it. I know there's a lot of people that will disagree with that. I don't think this was the case for the committee saying, well, we have to put Alabama in because they won the SEC. I just think they honestly thought that Alabama was better than this Florida State team. But I agree with what you said there. And I'm sure they took this into consideration. And that's why you don't really, when you go on and you're Boo Corrigan, you don't talk about Florida State in the third string quarterback, because that's not who was going to play. You know, Brock Lynn was a true freshman, who probably didn't get many snaps during the year at all. And then he's thrust in the position in the past couple of weeks where he's got to learn the offense more. And Tate Rodemaker was going to, you know, have 3 weeks to get ready. And he's not a great quarterback, we don't think, but he's been in the system for 3 or 4 years. He knows the offense. Their defense was clearly elite I mean, that Louisville team's pretty good offense. You know, Jeff Brohm's one of the best offensive coaches out there, and they just completely shut them down. So, you know, who's to say that this Florida State team is that much better than this Michigan team? I mean, I think Michigan's better, but they both have been playing great defense, and the offense, you know, can be kind of, you know, a little suspect there. So it goes to my original point where I don't know how you unequivocally say that this Florida State team could not compete with one of the top two teams in the country.
Now, Mitch, do you know why did they choose to use Boo Corrigan as the spokesperson for the committee?
He's the job of the head of the committee, and I think it rotates. Mm-hmm. I think that's his second year on. It is a thankless job for more reasons mm-hmm. than one. Primarily the things I just talked about, but also, it's a committee of 13, and he's speaking for the committee. Mm-hmm. So he's not necessarily agreeing with everything he's saying because he might have been overruled. Like back in my previous life when I was the editor at Athlon Sports, I would go on and do these radio interviews all spring and summer talking about our predictions. And not every prediction we had in the magazine was what I thought exactly because we had like a little committee that voted. So I would go on probably 7 years ago and talk to Willie on the air and be like, oh, yeah, I really love this Texas Tech team so-and-so, and I might not have believed it, you know. So it's kind of a weird situation for him. I'm sure he, for the most part, believes the things he's saying, but it's just, a thankless job.
Now, should we look at this Florida State and Georgia game and say, you know what, say if Georgia does win, see, they got it right. Should we look at it from that standpoint? Because I think right now there's nothing Coach Norvell can say to his players that's going to sort of motivate them. Because their thing is, listen, we did everything that y'all asked us to do, and y'all still left us out the playoffs. And now we get this consolation prize of, oh, you get to play Georgia. Well, I mean, yes, and it's a big bowl, but we deserve to be in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, it's and you know, I don't know about their opt-outs. I haven't seen yet guys like Jared Verse, if they're going to play or not, Kieran Coleman. You know, I'm only half kidding here. My prediction is they either like win by 21 or lose by 21. Like they're the most motivated team or they're the least motivated team. How many question for you, Derek? I know it was a different era. Opt-outs weren't a thing. How many bowl games did you play in?
Well, the state 4 years, we played in three.
What was your? I mean, I'm just curious. Like, how did you approach them? Again, different era, but was it just sort of like a let's go out and have fun? Or were you in there like, hey, this is our final game, let's go out and win, set the tone for the next year?
Well, my senior year was a little bit different than it was, you know, my freshman year, then my junior year, beginning go my sophomore year. It was different. The thought process was a little bit different. But I think my senior year, it was, okay, back then, you know, guys had to play in bowl games to sort of up their stock.
Yeah.
So it was, okay, I need to play in this game, but I don't want to get hurt. So that's kind of my thought process. I went out there and played, but it's like, man, cross your fingers. I pray I don't get hurt. I think, you know, well as anybody else know, it's different now. These guys are now concentrating, especially the seniors or the juniors that have that plan on, getting into the draft. These guys look at it different. They're like, listen, we're not playing in this last game because in fear of getting hurt. They don't need to stack, you know, any more stats. They're worried about getting hurt rather than putting up more stats.
Yeah, it's interesting in just talking how I think all of our attitudes have changed about this. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know when this started as a trend, guys. It was like 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. At first, I think we're all like, what are you? You're not playing a bowl game? That's ridiculous. And now, like, I forgot who it was. I know Bo Nix is, but I saw recently a big name player announce they weren't playing a bowl game.
Yeah,
I
was like, Caleb Williams is not playing.
Yeah, of course they wouldn't play. Like, why would they? So it's just everything, you know, we can be outraged by things and then we slowly become second nature and we get used to them. So, I mean, we're adapting as fans of the sport as well.
Heisman Trophy finalists were announced yesterday. Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, and Marvin Harrison Jr. Do you have a vote?
I do have a vote.
So I will not ask you who your vote would be. But my question is Marvin Harrison Jr. Look, Marvin Harrison Jr. is a spectacular player, and what he's meant to Ohio State is invaluable. I can't help but wonder how much of the Marvin Harrison Jr. hype is fueled by the fact that his name is Marvin Harrison.
I think some of it, tell you the truth. We expected him to be good, and he was good. Although he was, you know, it's funny because Ohio State has an unbelievable, and I I always make fun of people, announcers, for using the word unbelievable too much, because a lot of things are actually believable. But Ohio State's run of recruiting wide receivers is almost unbelievable. Like in the past, under Brian Hartline, under the past 6-7 years. And the five stars. Now, he's a top 100 player, definitely a highly recruited guy, but he's like in the 80s or 90s. So he's not one of the top wide receivers they've even recruited. But it was clear when he set foot on campus, his maturity and just everything about him. But, Caroline, I think there's something to that. And, you know, you watch him, and he is really, really good. And that's why, like, I think we all kind of sometimes give Ohio State more of the benefit of the doubt than they deserve. It's like, oh, they'll just get him the ball in the clutch situation. But we saw that offense. You know, he was – his numbers aren't – there's, I'm sure you'll point one out, Carlin. There's receivers with better numbers this year than Marvin Harrison Jr.
Now, Mitch, with that being said, and I know I'm not going to ask you who you're going to vote for or whatnot. Is there maybe one or two guys that you thought was deserving to be, you know, amongst the guys that are going to be in New York?
It's interesting this year. I did not last year. You know, we do the straw poll every week, and I remember changing my vote a lot as the season progressed. And I did a little bit this year. Like, we did the straw poll, and I can say I had Luther Burden in my top three for a while, then dropped him out. It's funny, that offense kind of was so – Burden's stats were so good at the beginning, and then it became more like Cody Schrader, the running back there. But I thought this year it was pretty, for me, cut and dry, like the three finalists and then Marvin Harrison, like, you know. I did not vote for Marvin Harrison, I'll put that. So, like, the other three finalists were in my top three, and I thought it was pretty cut and dry there. So, like, I don't think this year was as wide open, and there's outrage that player X wasn't invited and all that. Like, again, I think Luther Burden was a really good player, but I can't – I think the people that deserve to be there are there. Those are the best players, especially at their at the marquee positions. I'm sure there are, you know, defensive linemen or an offensive tackle here and there that, like, you could say is one of the better players in the sport, but we all know those guys aren't going to very rarely go to New York. So I think the voters, for the most part, got it right, since those four finalists are headed to New York.
Hey, guys. Greetings from Chicago.
Willie!
We are chatting with Mitch.
Up until a minute ago, I was the best two-sport athlete from Vanderbilt on the played intramural softball and basketball. But now I've been trumped by Willie Donick.
What was the height of the intramural basketball career at Vanderbilt, Mitch?
It wasn't great. you know, we had a team once.
Was there a championship in there?
One of the guys on our team played high school basketball in Kentucky. As you know, it's just a typical small-town guy. He averaged about 30 points a game, and the rest of us averaged about 2. He got hurt, broke his wrist. We played a bunch of biology grad students, one bunch of guys, and, like, we were just making fun of him before the game. We got run off the court by, like, 30 points. So that's the
y'all needed his 30
that's
points.
My biggest my memory there, so, you know.
The outstanding memory. Outstanding.
Yes.
Talking to Mitch Light from the Athletic. Mitch, you know, the portal continues to evolve. We know it was crazy from the start. I'm just wondering what you're noticing with your colleagues on the trends here. Like, every day we're seeing, it seems like, a dozen quarterbacks that are out there going in. It's like it's even gone to a next level. What are you noticing?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. The numbers. Max Olson, who you guys, I think, have had on your show before.
Yes.
You should get him again. He's you know, we call him the Portal King. Internally, and he monitors all this, and he had a story today, an update, and the numbers were whatever the record-breaking numbers were last year, they were higher this year. And quarterbacks are the ones, you know, there's just, you guys have seen it, there's so many quarterbacks, and, you know, Vanderbilt's had 3 quarterbacks, I think Michigan State's had 3 quarterbacks. It's not just, it's multiple quarterbacks on teams too. And I'm just fascinated in what, like, where does everyone find their spot? Okay, let's the guy like Ken Seals played at Vanderbilt for 4 years. We saw him do some good things. I think for the most part, we don't think he's a Power 5 starter or going to be guaranteed a spot by any stretch. He gets an offer from Utah. So if you're a guy like Ken Seals, Cam Rising's coming back for a 6th year, but they've had 2 backups transfer. So do you go there, maybe chance to play on a, you know, really good team that might compete for the Big 12 title, playing behind a quarterback who's been hurt a lot in his career, or he also, I think he's going to a visit at Ohio University. Or do you go to a place like that where you got a much better chance to start? So I'm interested to see where the chips fall, because there's so many guys of different caliber experience. You know, we all know the Cam Ward, the guy from Washington State who might end up at Ohio State. Those are the headliners. But I think when you dig a little deeper, I think it's just fascinating to see where all these guys are going to fall. because you can't – one thing, too, is the NCAA really enforcing the two-time transfer thing is you can't transfer again unless you graduate early, then you can move on. So a lot of these decisions are made by young quarterbacks that still have 2-3 years of eligibility. They're kind of stuck at their new places.
Mitch, I'm curious, too, behind the scenes. You guys, along with a lot of other sites, were announcing that a person was – going to go into the portal and going to go to a certain school before the portal really even opened up. And so I short of a full investigative thing, it just leads you to believe, you know, people are tampering and no, people aren't blindly going into the portal. It doesn't make any sense that you should. I mean, why would you just dive into the ocean without any navigation? So you could argue that the rules should be different, but it does seem like it's kind of out of control.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's, you know, agents. Like, if you'll see, and I'm not going to sit here and say the Athletic, you know, we're high and mighty, but we've got certain standards. Like, you'll see a couple of sites tweet over the weekend, this player is expected to go into the portal. Well, what happens is an agent sends a bunch of people notes, and they put them in. And, like, we would not publish that until the kid's actually in the portal or one of our writers has confirmed with the kid or someone who knows. So that's part of it. That's part of the equation. The agent's getting involved and putting it out there early. Then obviously, yes, there's tampering going on. There's no way. There's not. You know, as you said, a kid who can't officially enter the portal on Monday is being reported on Friday or Saturday, and his expected destination is already known. So clearly there's tampering going on there. But one thing, too, Willie, you can put your name in the portal and not in return to your school, but your school also, I think once you're in the portal, does not have to continue your financial aid, your scholarship. So it's a risk there. So you could put your name in the portal, see what's out there legally, you know, going to visits, and also come back if your school's willing to have you back.
This was something I just saw randomly on Twitter. I didn't even recognize the person that put it out there. I think he was a lawyer of some sort, though. And he said, a little word to the wise, if you're going to play this game as an athlete, if you went to a school and you got some NIL money and you got an agreement, and then you go into the portal, don't expect to get anything more, and don't be surprised when somebody asks you for some of the money back. I wonder what's going on with that.
Yeah, I think I saw that too, and I can't speak any specifically other than I saw it, but that makes sense. And I don't know what the legality. I mean, these kids do sign most yeah. places. I think you do sign an NIL contract, and I'm sure there's language in it that say if you don't fulfill X amount of time at the school, you have to give some of the money back, you know, or, you know. So I don't really know the specifics of how it works, but there's a ton that goes on behind the scenes at the NIL that we don't know. Like, I don't know if you guys saw some Texas A&M, some high-profile Texas A&M guys in recent days tweeting, like, we never got anything, and they weren't criticizing the school. They were criticizing all the people that said that Texas A&M was paying these kids millions. So they said, you know, we never got anything that year. So again,
because they told us they were making millions.
Yeah, there's just so much that we don't know. And again, it's like with the portal, like you have these kids leaving schools and they can say to their current coach, hey, coach, school X is offering me this and school X is Y is offering me this. Well, the coaches can't confirm it. Like there's nothing in writing there. So it's just I'm not going to feel sorry for these coaching staffs. They're all very well paid. It's a difficult job. We know that. But they're also left in a bind. Like, we don't really know who we're, you know, bargaining against because we don't know who to believe if these numbers are actually real.
Right. And I've heard Charlie Baker talk about this, and I noticed in The Athletic, this will be my last question, Mitch, that Charlie Baker now is proposed the creation of a new subdivision that would basically say, let's just be upfront about this whole thing with the NIL.
Yeah, and that broke today. It's ongoing. You can read about it anywhere, any site. I haven't dug it too deep, but basically it's sort of the first step in what we thought like the haves and the have-nots, the schools that with the big budgets that can afford this type of stuff. And then there's things about, you know, contributing X amount of money for like $30,000 per athlete per year into a trust fund and all this stuff. So it's basically just, you know, some consistency with NIL, but then there's still some consistency with compensating the athletes, but then there could also be NIL above and beyond that. But all that stuff is just coming out now. It seems to be a lot of common sense involved, but, you know, I think we're far from this stuff, you know, becoming a reality.
Now, Mitch, what do you make of Clark Lee and the Vanderbilt football team? It seems like guys are you know, jumping in the portal. I know he has, there was a report that he has two guys coming to visit that were in a portal, coming to visit Vandy. I think a receiver and a quarterback. But you got guys that play some good football for you that are choosing to get in the portal. Where does this leave this program?
Yeah, it's obviously a tough time, tough situation. You know, I think what we're finding, Derek, is, I mean, this is going to sound stupid, but, like, winning is important. Like, last year at this time, the program took a step forward from, you know, 0-8 in the SEC in his first year to winning those two games late in the year, 5-7, showed some real signs of progress. There were a lot of guys that had offers to go elsewhere, and they retained almost all the guys they wanted to retain last year, and I think part of that was because there was some light at the end of the tunnel. Well, this year you take 2, 3, 4, 5 steps back. You're uncompetitive in most of your games. So I think, you know, I don't think, you know, I'm not that close to the program. I don't know if many of these decisions are all more NIL-based. I think a lot of them were just guys looking back and saying, hey, I've been here a couple years. We took a step back this year. I want to go have an opportunity to win elsewhere. So I think it's a combination. Sure, there's some NIL offers that are bigger, better elsewhere, but I think also it was just the lack of competitive this year. So it's definitely a tough time. I mean, there were C.J. Taylor, I don't know if you saw that, the outstanding linebackers coming back. That was definitely a positive, but especially, you know, wide receiver position, there's some real difference makers that are moving on. So they're going to have to be more active in the portal than they probably ever wanted to be or planned to be.
Mitch Light, appreciate you as always. Mitch covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, I look forward to Jaden Daniels hoisting the Heisman Trophy this weekend.
No comment.
We'll see.
I want to see Marvin Harrison Jr. hold it up, okay?
We'll see.
One for the wide out.
You receivers. You get out of here. Mitch, appreciate
you. All right, take care, guys.
We'll chat next week. All right, Willie Donick has joined the program. So I want to get Willie's thoughts on the college football playoff. Does he think the CFP committee got it right? And of course, we'll get right back into your phone call. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.